When a fire destroyed the Tulaksak water plant and washateria back in January, the village lost its only source of drinking water. For 3 days, no shipments of water came in. Then, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation brought several cases in on a snow machine. The clinic rationed those for elders and babies. More water had been donated, but couldn't make it to the village. The ice on the river was too thin for heavy vehicles, and the airport runway was snowed in, because the man who usually plowed it was in the ICU with COVID-19. He later died. At the time of the fire, a third of the village had tested positive for the virus. Spokesperson for the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, Jeremy Zedek, said Tulaksak told the state they didn't have access to potable water. At the end of that first week, a little more water came in when the airport runway was finally plowed. At that time, the entire supply of drinking water in Tulaksak amounted to less than 2 glasses of water per person per day. Midway through the second week, the state issued a press release saying residents had, quote, a number of options for access to water, from donations to buying water at the store to packing and boiling water from a frozen river located 2 miles from the village.
We definitely have not enough water.
Tulaksak resident Kyle Peter says the village's need for water wasn't met during the first 2 weeks following the fire. He bought bottled water from the store, which he described as expensive. His partner is pregnant, and he didn't want her drinking the river water.
I don't want her to touch any of the river waters. I want her and my baby to be safe. So.
But for himself, Peter made do with the river water, even though he says it's contaminated. 2 glasses of water per person per day does not meet the CDC guidelines, which say people should drink about 8 glasses a day. And that doesn't account for water needed for cooking, cleaning, bathing, and washing hands, especially the amount of hand washing recommended during a pandemic. The state was in contact with Tulaksak from the day the fire occurred and says it was continuously checking in on the community's water supply and the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation's efforts to restore water access. It was more than a month after the fire when the state chartered a plane to send privately donated water to Tulaksak. The state said that using the National Guard to deliver water or supplies would have been against the law when other organizations were able to meet the community's need or other planes were cheaper to charter. In the meantime, local residents like Kyle Peter were left to pick their way through the thick river ice for water and haul it 2 miles home.
You have to go on your knees or sometimes your belly to go to the bottom of the hole.
3.5 weeks after the fire, Governor Dunleavy issued a disaster declaration for Tulaksak. In a press conference, Deputy Director Paul Nelson for the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management defended the governor's timeline.
Declare a disaster immediately when an event happens is usually only reserved for when the community is utterly overwhelmed and there is an imminent or immediate life threat.
Samantha Montano, professor of emergency management at Massachusetts Maritime Academy and author of forthcoming book Disasterology, says that because the disaster declaration is in the hands of one person, the governor, communities must appeal to him.
There really isn't much that a community can do once they've requested a declaration to speed that process along outside of garnering public support and rallying media around their cause and kind of putting that political pressure on a governor to make those kinds of declarations.
In the case of Tulaksak, Governor Dunleavy waited almost a month to issue a disaster declaration and more than 5 weeks to send a representative to the site. Previous administrations have responded faster. Under Dunleavy's predecessor, Governor Bill Walker, a similar washaterian water plant fire occurred in the interior village of Alotna. The Walker administration sent a representative to the village about 7 days later, and 10 days after the fire, they issued a disaster declaration. Walker didn't put the funds towards sending the community water. Instead, the funds went to fixing the water plant. Instead of providing immediate relief, he focused on long-term recovery. Dunleavy did the same with Tulik Sack. This is common in Alaska State disaster response. But there's nothing in the law specifying that disaster funds can't go towards immediate relief. According to state statute, a disaster declaration is a governor-issued document that immediately frees up to $1 million in state funds and relief efforts without requiring legislative approval. There's no law saying when a disaster declaration needs to be signed. In the past decade, disasters have been declared the same day of the event or months later. But on average, all governors in the past decade issued a disaster declaration within 29 days of a crisis occurring. Governor Dunleavy, with an average of 45 days for a disaster declaration, is pulling that overall average up. His predecessors, Governors Bill Walker and Sean Parnell, responded on average in 25 days. And compared with Governor Walker, Dunleavy's declarations have been about half as frequent. In his first 2 years in office, Governor Walker declared 14 disasters. In Dunleavy's first 2 years, he's declared 7. And other events have gone undeclared by the governor as disasters, like a water crisis following a power outage in the northwest Arctic village of Selawik this year. Dunleavy has issued fewer declarations than his predecessors, but KYUK's numbers don't reflect his disaster declaration for the coronavirus pandemic, which is the only public health disaster declared in Alaska in the past decade. Governor Dunleavy's office referred KYUK's request for comment on this story to Jeremy Zedek, spokesperson for the Alaska Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. Zedek said Governor Walker declared an unusually high number of disasters in 1 year.
Governor Dunleavy has not had as many disaster events occur during his term, and that's a good thing. Unfortunately, Governor Dunleavy has experienced two of the largest disaster events our state has seen in many years.
First, the 2018 Cook Inlet earthquake, which struck a day before he took office, and then the COVID-19 pandemic, for which his disaster declaration expired earlier this year. 45 days after the fire destroyed Tulik Sack's water plant, YKHC installed a temporary water filtration system in the school that gives the community stable access to drinking water. During the interim, the community lived on donation to donation of bottled water and on river water. A lack of quick aid particularly impacts communities in the bush, where supplies are harder to ship in and cost more. One cargo airline quoted more than $30,000 to ship 2 weeks' worth of drinking water from Anchorage to Tulik Sack. The cost of this kind of aid can be too expensive for many bush communities.
I mean, this is why a lot of people, myself included, advocate for policy change, right? When we're, you know, talking about what we need to do differently to meet communities' needs.
To do that, disaster expert Samantha Montano says that the law will need to be clarified.
Emergency management tends to be a policy area that nobody really pays that much attention to until there is a disaster, and then the limitations and the inadequacies of our approach become really visible.
New policy could help at a time when natural disasters are expected to increase due to climate change. Neither State Representative Tiffany Zolkowski nor State Senator Lyman Hoffman responded to KYUK's requests for comment for this story. In Bethel, I'm Olivia Eberts.